So we're lucky to be getting anything at all. And parts of it, you'll have no problem understanding. Parts of it may be a little difficult. Here we go. All right, I'm recording now. On the line with me from Peru, Jerry Wills. Jerry, where are you guys now?
Kathy and I are currently in Charapoto.
And where is that in relation to the Tecachi Valley?
Well, we're north of Tecachi, about 7 hours drive.
Now, have you already been into the Tecachi Valley?
Yes, we've been there. We just got back from there. Actually, we got back yesterday. We were there for about 3 days.
And would you were you able to achieve your goals and reach your destination in the valley?
Yeah, we did. We arrived to Tecachi, went out to the valley. Once you get to Tecachi, it's another 3 days drive. They have a road there now, which is great, because it took us 3 days to walk that distance before, last time. But we drove 3 hours, got to the campsite, set up camp, and once we got it set up, within 30 minutes, it started pouring rain like crazy. Thunder, lightning, wind blowing, heavy rain. It lasted for about 24 hours.
So then you had to do all your hiking in mud, I guess.
Well, not really. It was muddy, but it wasn't muddy. The soil is completely sandy, and there's so much plant there.
So were you able to get to the additional hidden cities that they had told you about?
No, we didn't get up. The issue basically was one where the places that they were talking about taking us to were several days' journey, using burros to go back very far. And with the threat of rain the way it was, landslides as we saw, it just felt it was the wrong time to try and do that.
Uh-huh. So, but you did make it to the to that stone that has the story on it, has all the pictograms on it?
Yeah, we did. It basically was like it was before, kind of buried the jungle floor. Bit of stone sticking out. The men that were with us, they had tools, and they're removing the dirt from around the stone and fully exposed it. We have footage of that happening, as well as the details are on the stone. It took a while to clean it and get it to where you could actually see what was on the stone. I think with the equipment we were using this time, last time, we have so much more detail, and it's just incredible. It's just amazing.
So you got some good video this time.
Oh yeah, we did a lot of filming around this thing, a lot of still pictures as well. The sun was at just the right angle, whereas before when we were there, there's a lot of trees and such. The sun was obscured. Now we had pretty bright sunlight because the clouds moved away, and it cast shadows, so you could really see the detail were on the stone. And washing it off with wet moss and water revealed the detail from we saw last time.
Were you able to get any of the any footage of any of the ruins along the way?
Well, not really. There weren't any ruins along there. If there were, they were obscured by the jungle. Because when we were going in, we noticed the gigantic building just immediately off to the... what would that be? I suppose it would be southwest, and we just saw these giant sky, like huge towering columns, dark lightning. So they were just really moving as quickly as they could to get us to the campsite, hoping that it wouldn't rain before we got there, because if we had gotten there and it was raining, we'd have been sitting up camping with downpour.
So what's next?
Well, the next thing we're doing today here at Puerto Rico, we're just taking a day off just to relax a little bit. This trip from Tecachi here is basically just a dirt road that's just full of potholes and just walking like a snake through the mountains. 7.5-8 hours just, you know, being bounced up and down and nothing really in between. So it's exhausting. We're taking the day off and just recuperating from that. And tomorrow we're going to go to a location called Polish. There are stones there as well that are similar to the ones that are in Monte Cristo and Belém that Kathy had deciphered and determined that there was a lot of, you know, some little cities back there up to that. Well, there are more stones to search. And we're going there tomorrow to well that and continue with, you know, the information that we're putting together for the next episode.
Okay, so there you are. That's Jerry Wills from Peru. And as I say, I recorded that that conversation on Sunday afternoon, this past Sunday afternoon. And so by now they are into the next leg of their expedition. My guest this evening is Marshall Masters. And the reason that I asked him to come and talk to us again is that I received an email from one of our listeners who put a link in there to a story, an article. And this article had to do with some pretty dramatic earth changes that seemed to be happening. So I sent it over to Marshall Masters and said, what do you think about this? Talked with him on the telephone. He told me he had more update and, you know, results of more analysis on this object that was that is in the sky and is being captured on a video camera that's permanently mounted overlooking a volcano. And as I said, I believe that volcano to be in, is it Costa Rica or Puerto Rico, Marshall?
It's in Costa Rica.
Yeah, I was right the first time. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
All right. Marshall, welcome back. We're glad to have you.
Pleasure to be here, Kevin, as always.
Marshall,
I love the music, too.
Do you? Well, good.
Oh, your show's always got the best music.
Well, I try. You know, I try to select music that kind of pumps us up a little bit.
Yeah, man, kind of like your Cheech and Chong, you know? I love it.
Okay, I want to start off with this update, and then I want to move to the subject of Robert Harrington. And then we'll work into that the article that I sent you the link to and that information. Or maybe we'll work that into the update, I don't know. But I do want to talk about Robert Harrington, Dr. Harrington, here a little bit tonight. People should know that Marshall and I have been trying to make video connection since before the show. And his computer is working fine, and the video is showing up for him on his computer, but it's not making the trip to us. And so we're not getting his video. But that's okay, because we've got a nice picture of Marshall Masters up on your screen, and I can promise you, if you've never watched the show and seen him live on the show with us, he looks just like that. Okay. Marshall, after, you know, you and I talked before the show last time. We talked after the show. And then, of course, we talked during the show. But we talked about how people, a lot of people, are poo-pooing this thing in the sky. And how frustrating it is because people are saying, you know, oh, that's a reflection in the lens and so forth. I got some email like that after we did that show. I got a couple of emails from people, good people and faithful listeners, but, you know, they said, hey, you know, I think it's a reflection. But you've got some additional analysis, and I want you to tell us about what you've got and what does that tell us.
Well, you know, on the reflection theories, we've addressed that. And all the people that say it's a reflection never look at our work. So I'm always having to defend it against ignorant people. They're ignorant because they don't look at our work. If they would look and see, we've done sensor analysis, foreground illumination, all of these things. We've debunked all of these things. And but the problem is that the reason why it persists is people really don't want the truth. And so they look at it, and like frightened children, they say something, big, important, you know. I love it when they start off with, well, it seems logical to me, or something like that. And but they see this, and they immediately, you know, they start feeling body parts shrinking or whatever their problem is, and boom, they flag it as that. Well, we have photos of it, and the big one is that they always go, it's in front of the clouds, it's in front of the clouds, it's in front of the clouds. Kind of like the Lilliputians, you know?
Well, you know, this is something I predicted.
Mario, whatever. I mean, they're always doing that. Well, we got a sequence and it shows the object descending at sunset as it always does, and it goes right behind a nice big fluffy cumulus cloud. Absolutely dead on, smoking gun, you know, that we're going to be putting up there for the benefit of all the morons who never bothered to take a look at what we published in our work before jumping to knee-jerk conclusions.
This reaction that we're discussing here is something. It's something that I predicted would be the case. Last year, I predicted that after December the 21st, 2012, with so much hype and, you know, so much buildup over December the 21st, and I said, and then when nothing happens, people are going to throw the baby out with the bathwater. And then when something real comes along, they're going to say, it's just more of that same old doomsday crap like December the 21st. And I think, this is just my opinion, I think that there were probably some spook agencies behind fanning those flames for that very purpose, because they know that's how people think. They know that we, myself included, I have a tendency, it's just a human tendency, to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and now here we are, and you're telling us this is very real, and we need to pay attention to it. So if it goes behind a cloud, it's certainly not a reflection in the lens, is it?
That's correct. But you know, and then once we've debunked the debunkers, the next thing they're going to go, if they can't do reflection and be convincing, they'll go to something else, like, it's a UFO. Or, I mean, I think the classic stupid one was a graphic that was posted that showed that it was a reflection inside the camera itself, and whoever did it had to be incredibly an old person who doesn't know anything about electronics and digital cameras, because they had the film plane at the back of the camera, which you'd have. I used to shoot old 4x5 Graflex when I was in the Army National Guard. I was a photojournalist. I loved that 4x5, sitting up there on a Huey and taking pictures. That was cool. You know, the film was at the back.
I don't think flying in a Huey is cool at all. Cameras,
and with movie cameras. So that's what people don't understand. Even if it's film or digital, all right, the back plane, which is where the film is going to be exposed, is always directly behind the lens. It's not at the back of the camera body. It's directly at the behind the lens. So I saw one of these detailed analyses of how the light beams were reflecting off the inside of a camera that would have been used in the 1800s. And, I mean, this is what happens is that people just, they will go to the most frivolous explanations imaginable. They're just frivolous. And it's for those that follow it, it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
What you said earlier is absolutely, absolutely. I saw 2012 was a huge wave, and it was an artificially generated wave. Part of it was organic, but also there was a lot of it that was really intended to just confuse and muddle people, that the more you look on the internet, the less certain you were of whatever you were looking at. That's the whole point of disinformation.
Mm-hmm.
People don't understand, most people don't understand the difference between propaganda and disinformation. And very simply, propaganda is to create consensus around a lie. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we've got the number one healthcare system in the world.
Okay.
The only thing it's number one at is that the number of families that it puts into bankruptcy every year. So that's propaganda. You know, this old we're number one mantra, or politicians, you know, the best is just around the corner. That's a lie, too. Disinformation, on the other hand, is not about consensus around a lie. Disinformation is about preventing a consensus around the truth.
Good point. Good
point. It is. The whole point of disinformation is a miss is as good as a mile.
All right. We have to take a break. We'll be back right now. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening, Marshall Masters. We're talking about, I've been calling it an object in the sky. And, Marshall, the last time you were with us, I think you called it the Blue Kachina.
Yep, we called it the Blue Kachina. And right now, what we're studying, I mean, everybody's, we had a lot of fun with denial there, but that deny whatever you want, the object is closing with us, because there's a couple of reasons that we know that it's closing. One, it is getting brighter. We're seeing companions with it. We're seeing multiple companions. Last time I was talking with you, we had just had discovered it had a moon, but now we're finding additional companions that are traveling with it from the Turi Alba feed, which it turns out to be the actual best quality feed of information on this thing on the planet. I mean, that's really the sad part for me, is that
but it's not being seen just from there.
You couldn't ask for better imagery, and you know, it's cast aside. But at the same time, we're seeing it pop up in Ontario, Canada, and that really surprised us. We're tracking it down. We had a gentleman who, interestingly enough, people will see two suns in the sky with their eyes, and what we'll see is that the second thing that they were talking about is actually a reflection. And when we look between the sun and that, we'll find another object. We found that to be the case. We're studying a feed that's coming out of Cabo San Lucas. And we're also working with an observer up in Ontario, and he's working on making a progression study, and we're following that, because what's happening is as the object's closing in with us, it's just simply becoming visible in more parts of the globe than before. And that trend is going to continue until it's visible to the naked eye for everybody.
All right, now,
which will happen, you know, in the second half of this year.
Why is it that you, now you explained this before, and I know the answer, but we have new listeners tonight, or people that are not new listeners, but they missed the last show. Shame on you. And so why is it that you don't identify this as Planet X?
Well, you know, it could very well be Planet X. What we're seeing is we're not seeing a single object now. We're seeing a cluster of objects traveling together. And there was also another group out there, 00 Skyview, and they've been tracking a mini constellation coming up, and where they actually plotted what they called possible orbitals in the region of space we're looking at, which is in the area of Ophiuchus, where it would come up. And Ophiuchus is, for those who follow the prophecies of Nostradamus, is where he says that's where the bad boy's going to come out of, Ophiuchus. And that, sure enough, is the case. When we first started looking at it in January, early January of this year, it had just finished its transit of Ophiuchus. And so, very clearly, around the turn of the year, and could have been very well in December 21, 2012, for that matter, it could have very well been in Ophiuchus. So, we're just simply seeing things that are happening. And, you know, call it a reflection if you just feel like you got to inoculate yourself. But that's not going to change the fact that we've got some pretty bizarre things happening with the planet. I mean, we got a spring that's yet to get warm in a lot of parts of the country.
Let's talk about that for just a little bit.
You know, we've got rising seabeds, increased volcanism. And, you know, earlier when you were talking about the disinformation, USGS has really turned into a heck of a disinformation agency, because I have yet, every time there's a major quake, the first thing they do is downgrade it. Every time. I've never seen them upgrade. And they always downgrade it so that it doesn't seem to have numbers so severe. If it's a 7.1, they'll downgrade it to a 6.9. If it's a 6.0, they'll downgrade it to a 5.8. They always take it down a little bit of, you know, it's like, you know, going to the tailor and he says, "They'll believe out a little in the crotch," you know? Same kind of thing.
Well, yeah, but you know, if we have a 12.9 and they downgrade it to a 12.7, that's not going to help them much.
I know. I mean, at 12.9, you know, that's like, it's that would just rattle your brains out of your head.
Yeah.
That would just, we're talking about, I guess, there was that great movie. I was watching it one night because I just was looking at something, and it was Continental Ice Drift, that cartoon thing with that they were doing with the big pachyderms. But the movie starts off with a squirrel that goes all the way to the core of the planet. And to chase the acorn, he's running around on the big magnetic ball, and that starts the whole planet coming apart. And, you know, I mean, that little squirrel just sticks in my mind. It was a good visual metaphor.
All right. I want to talk about the article. We'll just go ahead and throw this in, the article I sent you the link to. Now, this article talks about that all around the world, people are reporting suddenly something smells like rotten eggs.
And, methane.
Yeah. And these are big methane pockets that are being released. Why are they being released, and what's causing that?
Well, I mean, they're being released, and they're being reported by mainstream media. U.S. News put out an excellent article back in October of last year where they found that climate-changing methane is off the East Coast was starting to generate. And that doesn't surprise us because the Gulf Stream has been interrupted. It's been disrupted. It's not flowing as it was before. It's part of the reason we're having all the problems with the weather climate. If you remember the film Day After Tomorrow, same mm-hmm. scenario. The the Gulf stalls. Now, we reported on that back in 2010. We did two articles, disclosure articles. We were working with a Dr. Zangari, a theoretical physicist at the Frascati National Laboratories in Italy. And he'd been monitoring this for quite some time. He didn't happen to come across it. And what we actually have in that article is that you can clearly see that the Gulf Stream bifurcated. It split apart. All right. And then it eventually annealed back together, but that set in motion all of the consequences that we're seeing now. Now, methane, Kevin, is a real, real nasty problem. Mm-hmm. And the reason why methane is a real problem is that when you're looking at the what's causing global warming? Well, the number one causality is water vapor. Water vapor, it's the 800-pound gorilla in the deal. But it goes up and it comes down. However, you have these persistent gases. Methane, nitrous oxide, all right, CO2, and everybody always is focusing on CO2, but what they don't understand is that if you look at methane, methane will absorb 21 times as much as carbon will. It's 21 times worse than carbon. Nitrous oxide, the funny gas that the dentist gives you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just open up that valve, doc. Nitrous oxide is about 270 times that of CO2. All right. But methane is the one that really, really gets me. Nitrous oxide is, pretty much produced by burning industrial waste, different manufacturing processes. Methane, however, oh my God, there's so much of it locked up in the planet, and all we have to have is enough warm weather to release it all. I look at the methane that is in Alaska and in Siberia in the tundra. This is massive amounts of methane that are locked in. And methane is caused by the decomposition of plants. But all of this frozen tundra has locked that methane into the ground. That thaws, and that methane starts coming up, which is 21 times worse than CO2. All right? But wait, like they say on TV, but wait, there's more, right?
Right.
Okay, this is it. This is the twofer deal. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Because not only do you have the methane locked up in Siberia and anywhere that you got frozen tundra, but off the shore of the East Coast of the United States, which goes back to that article that was posted by U.S. News, that they're finding that the Gulf Stream on the East Coast is destabilized. And I'll read this. I just want to read this lead paragraph. This is really good. A changing Gulf Stream off the East Coast has destabilized frozen methane deposits trapped under nearly 4,000 square miles of seafloor, scientists reported Wednesday. Okay, and there's all of this methane, and it's in hydrate down in the ocean. And they can actually bring up these chunks of methane hydrate and light it. All right?
Mm-hmm.
Burns like a lamp. One of the things that there's been a theory as to the reason why ships disappear in the Bermuda Triangle is that there's this hydrate venting. That there's a water change and the water is getting warmer, and the what happens is this methane hydrate starts releasing from the seafloor, and it's bubbling up, and the bubbles will then eliminate the buoyancy of a ship.
Right.
So, I mean, the ship's no longer able to float.
Right.
So we have all of this hydrate off of our shorelines. We have, you know, it's documented the Gulf Stream is changing. We start getting a rapid release of methane. That is going to push us very fast into a severe case of warming, which will then flip us into another, you know, we'll either go into a mini ice age or, you know, it could be worse. But that's one of the concerns that you have. It's going to cause these huge climate shifts. And we're already seeing that. The jet stream has come down. Look at the havoc it's creating. All right. They already had fires in California that they shouldn't have those fires until the, you know, right in the center of the bad season. And it's early on that they're having these problems. So we're going to see a lot more of it. The weather patterns are going to continue changing. Another thing we're tracking is that you have an awful lot of seabed movement.
Let me throw something in here and ask a question. One of the articles that I looked at, and one of my callers, not during the show, but called and was talking about it with me. One of these articles says that the Earth is wobbling rather wildly. And that is partially that's partially the cause of the wild climate that we're having. What do you think?
Well, we haven't been able to, you know, determine if there's an increase in Earth's wobble.
All right, hold that thought. We have to take a break. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening is Marshall Masters. Marshall, as we got taken over by the break, we had just begun to address this idea of the Earth is wobbling, and you said we haven't been able to determine that the Earth is wobbling, right?
Well, I mean, we haven't seen that in our work, and I mean, I know that when we're, you know, using our sky programs like Starry Night and such that we use almost on a daily basis, we're not seeing something where the database is out of sync with what's happening. What we are seeing is that magnetic north is moving quite rapidly now, faster than ever before. And, you know, as we've reported earlier on your show and other times that, and as well known, you know, they're having to paint new numbers on the end of the runways.
Yeah.
Because it's changing so fast. So there's an awful lot of subtle changes that are going on. What Americans really don't understand is how much concerted suppression there is of the news. And, you know, I mean, you can kind of guess by when you turn on the television, what do they have? It's show trials, political picadillos, feel-good stories, you know, about folks helping vets coming back without arms and legs.
I would, but you know, I would rather
that happen in the first place.
I would rather see those feel-good stories than the crap stories. You know, I mean, who gives 2 cents what's going on in Lindsay Lohan's life these days? You know, it's just one trauma after another. And I'm not unsympathetic with her as a person, but that ain't news anymore.
Really not news. And let's face it, when you look at the popularity numbers for mainstream media, it's the same thing as Congress, you know? It's under the toilet bowl lid.
Yeah.
And Congress has, what, a 7% approval rating?
Is it that
something
high?
Down low like that? And the media is right in line with it because people understand that, you know, we used to have a very robust media in the United States. The days of Walter Cronkite are dead.
Yeah.
And it's really a pity because now what you have are people that are just regurgitating what's handed to them. You know, when I was at CNN, it was when Ted Turner ran the show. I don't care what you say about Ted Turner. I thought the man was spectacular because CNN, when I was there, honest to God, was a news network. Now it's the unfortunately dead white female channel or whatever you want to call it.
Okay, look, I want to get back to the object in the sky for a minute. How have you been able to determine how far away this object is from Earth?
The distance is really, we're not able to make precise astronomical calculations on it because really when you think about it, we're dealing with secondhand information. We're getting a Vulcan feed operated by a university that's put this camera up on a volcano at around 10,000 feet, and what we get is what they provide. Now, to their credit, it's unedited, unmodified. They don't, you know, they haven't done anything to change the feed since we've been reporting on it, which I'm very grateful for. We keep getting it. But again, it's a surveillance camera feed. So it's, you really can't say exactly how far is it. But what's pretty clear is that it's on the other side of the sun from us. And, but whether that is a conjunction or a superior conjunction, I can't say.
Okay.
By the way, a difference between a superior conjunction and a conjunction is that when Venus is on the other side of the sun, it's in a superior conjunction. But when Mars is on the opposite side of the sun where it is now, it's just in conjunction. That's this for the phrases for people.
All right. Now, I want to move to Robert Harrington, Dr. Harrington.
Yeah.
Because he was the chief scientist, I guess chief astronomer, at the Naval Observatory.
Yep.
And he went to New Zealand with an 8-inch telescope and was able to find so-called Planet X, and was able to track its movement, and he estimated, at least I think in very general terms, but he estimated it, its distance, and that he estimated its path that it would be going.
Right.
Now, and I notice you have his paper on that on your website, Two Suns in the Sky. Is it there or at Yowza?
Yowza. Well, Two Suns in the Sky will take you to where I'm doing all the current work, and it's all published on Yowza. So either address for this will work fine.
Okay, and folks need to be members of Yowza in order to be able to download that, but it's there.
Well, yeah, there's some things that, you know, some there's some content that's premium content. One of the things we have to be careful with is that if I put up a large PDF, we'll start getting denial of service attacks on that.
Mm-hmm. I know.
PDF file, because a PDF file keeps serving, and it'll tie up your server, and so we have to put those as a premium content.
Yeah. Yeah, I found out about that, by the way.
You learned the hard way like me?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you got to bleed over it a little bit.
Yeah. But you learn and then you move on. Robert Harrington went down there and to New Zealand. He set up, he found Planet X, he tracked Planet X, and before he could get, he sent reports back, by the way.
Yeah, he sent everything. Actually, NASA got everything. What Harrington did was, and we've learned since the fellow that wrote the original story for us, John DiNardo, continued following it. And what he found was that Harrington had actually ordered the construction of a telescope had lenses ground to a very specific purpose. And it was sent to New Zealand. The observations were made. All of the films came back. All of the reports, findings, that went to NASA. NASA immediately buried everything. None of it's ever been released. And it was not long before Harrington could publish his findings, he contracted this mysterious rapid onset cancer. And I mean, you know, he was still a relatively young man, very healthy, very vital. But that's the case with a lot of these astronomers that are deep space astronomers. They die these bizarre, arcane deaths. They just don't die in bed like most folks expect to. They, you know, what I mean, you know, skateboard collisions, whatever. It's sometimes you have to think about it. You know, Shoemaker, all right? Mm-hmm. And when he died, he's in Australia. And what happens? He's out in the middle of nowhere.
And that's easy and to do.
One of these huge, long, you know, these things are twice as long as our trucks. And they kick up a dust cloud you can see for 10 miles away.
They're called and land
this
trains.
Thing hits him as they're passing on the road. You know, excuse me, I think that's just a little dicey. But that's just the whole thing. These guys are all of these, a whole generation of deep space astronomers just met mysterious deaths. But I think the reason why Harrington was assassinated, and I have to say that is my opinion, and most people who study this draw the same thing as his widow did. What I think got him killed was, one, he was really pushing the edge of the envelope by publishing a paper on Planet X and then having these observations made in New Zealand because he knew the object was approaching from the south. But he appeared in a television documentary which was aired on one of the mainstream channels, and it was featuring him and Zachariah Sitchin. The minute he gave Sitchin an interview in his office there at the U.S. Naval Observatory in Washington, game over. That was when I think that they pulled the handle on him. And also, for those that want to, what is the impact of that? What has been the consequence of this, all right, is that, and you can go into my site at yowza.com and just look up Harrington, but also look up an article, The Planet X Cover-Up in the Mainstream Media.
Hey, we have to step away for a break. We'll pick up with Harrington and the result and the impact of his death and the media. But we have to step away for a break here for a couple of minutes. My guest, ladies and gentlemen, this evening is Marshall Masters. And his research has, he says, proven that because a reflection doesn't hide behind the clouds. And this dips down behind the clouds in some photographs. And it's not a UFO. It is an astronomical body, and he's been researching it. They've been doing analysis. His team have been doing analysis on this for some time, and so we've talked about that. We've talked about Planet X. We've talked about some Earth changes that we're beginning to see that are pretty dramatic, and then we are also talking, just begun to talk about Robert Harrington. And Robert Harrington, Dr. Robert Harrington, was the chief astronomer at the Naval Observatory, went to New Zealand with a telescope in search of Planet X, found it, tracked it, documented it, and then was suddenly dead. Marshall, you had said just before the break took over, you know, the effect of that has been, and then you started talking about the media. So let's just pick up there.
Well, you know, when you look at the media, one of the things that it's kind of like the the reflection mantra. It's a reflection, it's a reflection, it's a reflection. Another mantra that people debunk it with is, well, if it was really there, we would be told, the media would report it. Right? That's always the one you get. I'd like to read for you a couple of... Let's. You want to go through the years? You want to see what mainstream media was reporting on this?
Okay, go ahead.
All right, let's start with the Victoria Advocate, June 13th, 1968. All right, and this is... they were talking about Pluto. And what they are saying is, we have a 90 to 90% confidence that Uranus and Neptune are being disturbed, and by one candidate, for that is a single planet X. It's conceivable there could be other gravitational effects on the two orbits. Go to 1972. All right. This is an article about Halley's Comet. Very interesting. Appeared in the Nevada Daily Mail. Intolerable errors in the predicted timetable of Halley's Comet have led a University of California scientific team to believe a 10th planet may be circling the sun beyond Pluto, outermost known planet in the solar system. Okay. And here's the kicker. Three computer scientists at the university's Lawrence Livermore Laboratory said Friday their prediction of the planet's existence is based on mathematical calculations related to the orbit of the mysterious comet. So it was perturbing Halley. All right. And this was again reported by Bangor Daily News. We have here's one from 1972, Beaver County Times. Existence of the mysterious 10th planet has been predicted before, but Brady is the first to predict its orbit, mass, and position. All right. Now you have the Phoenix Gazette, 1972. The calculations concerning Planet X evolved from the studies of Halley's Comet. Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, 1972, the proposed body dubbed Planet X by scientists would be three times as large as Saturn and twice as far as Neptune from the sun. All right. Here's Sunday Times Sentinel, 1972, discovery of a Planet X nearly 6 billion miles from Earth on the border of the Milky Way has been predicted by scientists at the Lawrence Livermore Laboratory. All right. That's, we've got a lot more goodies for 72, but let's move forward through time. Let's look at 73 to 80. All right. And here what we have is, here's one, the Times News. And in 1978, Dr. James Christie, the United States Naval Observatory, found that Pluto had a moon. It was named Charon for the boatman. But they go further to say it could not be Planet X. Indeed, astronomers now believe that the whole hypothesis was based on erroneous observations and that there's no Planet X elsewhere. So that's 1980. But then it comes back and you have other reports. And this one's really interesting. This is the Akala Star Banner. Two other astronomers at the Naval Observatory, Robert Harrington and Thomas Van Flanders, theorized that in the distant past, an unknown planet passed near Neptune and gravitational forces ripped off a chunk of matter that became Pluto. All right. So this is, you know, you listen to this and you think, God, that sounds like fringe lunatic idiots. But it's mainstream science, mainstream press. All
yeah.
right.
Mm-hmm.
Let's start, you know, we go to 1983. Recent calculations by the U.S. Naval Observatory have confirmed the orbital perturbation exhibited by Uranus and Neptune, which Dr. Thomas C. Van Flanderen says could be explained by a single undiscovered planet. All right? And, I mean, it just, you when you go through these news reports, we put snippets from all of these articles. And you can sit there and you can read what people were saying. The problem is not that we're publishing the truth. We're publishing the truth. The problem is that people don't want the truth. They don't want to read this stuff. They don't want to look at this. It's much easier to go, well, if it was there, they'd tell us. Well, they're telling us it's there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they've been doing it for decades. But the problem is that the whole conversation came to a screeching halt. All of this dialogue came to a screeching halt with the death of Harrington. Period. Now, here's another one that was interesting. The Observer reported December 17th, 1984. For several months now, the possible mechanism that has stirred the greatest interest and debate is the one involving the sun's theorized companion star, Nemesis, or Death Star, as scientists call it. The companion star, they reason, could follow an eccentric orbit about 1.5 times as long as it is wide. That would take it far out, as much as 3 light-years from the sun, and bring it back to the vicinity of the near solar system once every 26 million years. So they're theorizing on that. In 1985, they're theorizing that Planet X, here's the headline, mysterious shifting Planet X may have killed off the dinosaurs. Another headline from 1985, the Planet X theory is one of many being considered by scientists as explanations of the extinction peaks. Daily Union, January 1985, planet may have killed dinosaurs. All right. The Freelance Star, 1985. What killed the dinosaurs? New theory heats up debate. All right. We go to July 1987. New York Times. Looking for Planet X. Old clues. New theory. If there is a large planet toward the edge of the solar system, said the scientist John Anderson of the Jet Propulsion Laboratory, it must be traveling in an elongated orbit, nearly at a right angle to the orbits of the other planets. All right.
Well, now, isn't that what Harrington said?
We just have oodles and oodles. So,
but that is what Harrington said, too.
That's what Harrington said. Mm-hmm. And but here's one I thought was really interesting, because this is... You know, the Pioneer probes,
yeah.
That, and it had nothing to do with Planet X. Gainesville Sun, all right, from July 1987, search for Planet X continues. But he feels certain that the Pioneer probes have ruled out one possibility. Neptune and Uranus probably were not disturbed by a distant star because the gravitational effects from such a star would have pulled ever so slightly on the probes. Okay? A distant star, like... not a nemesis.
Mm-hmm.
But the point here is I'm giving you the good and the bad, both sides of the conversation, so you can see that there is an open dialogue. There's an open debate. The scientists are talking, they're reporting, they're theorizing, mainstream media, New York Times included, they're reporting. And when you look at the statistical pattern of all of this activity, once you get to Harrington's death, okay,
mm-hmm.
That was it. Once he died, the whole conversation just went right off a cliff. Everybody knew in science at that point. This is like French kissing the third rail. Don't do it.
Okay, so nobody's reporting on it now.
It's not, no. There are still, you get little blips that come in. Ali Bushi? Can never recall that last name, but he's on CNN.
Mm-hmm.
You see these
the bald-headed
video
guy.
Clips that pop up on YouTube where there's these reports and they come up like little trial balloons, or it seems like somebody is just trying to, you know, to get it into the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is that there is such a tight lid on this now. All right. One thing you got to remember, there's a couple of huge shifts, sea shifts that changed in media. The worst thing that really happened was, and I am not affiliated with any political party. To me, they're all just forget about it. But the Republicans really, really hurt us on this one. Because they were the ones that it used to be you could have a limited number of radio stations, TV stations, and print. So nobody could build a monopoly in the media business.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that didn't suit the Republicans, and they wanted to have their companies like Clear Channel. And so what happens is that they got that changed, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was Colin Powell's son, who at the time was the head of the FCC. And he was the one who opened this Pandora's box and stole from America any kind of real media. Because what happened was that they would set up their stuff, their Clear Channel stuff. It's like, you look at the competing shows that are out there. Hannity, okay? He's everywhere across the country. All right, all of these attack boys are out there, and they're just dominating one channel after another. And the reason why that works, it all comes from one simple studio feed. But these, like Clear Channel and these other networks, they'll go into a town and they will make an insanely juicy offer to a local radio or TV station. The owner sells out, retires, and moves to Bahamas or whatever. The first thing that they do is that they go in and they fire the news department. They just fire them. They keep the salespeople. They go into the head end. They pull out the gear. They put it in a box. And that box is taking the network feed from their studio and regurgitating it. And there you go.
Yeah.
There's no more local reporting, no more local news. So, you know, when we where we're going, why do we have such an awful media in this country? It was because a Republican administration said we want it that way. That's the simple truth of it.
Let me tell you something though.
Let me tell you something.
I have in my life been both. I was at one time a Democrat, then I was a Republican, and then I was awake.
I love it. That's a good one.
Yeah. I'll tell you something. At that level, there's not 2 cents difference in these parties. And if it hadn't been the Republicans doing it, it would have been the Democrats that sold out. Whoever's in power is going to sell the American people out. That's their job. That's what they get elected to do, is to sell us out. And so whoever's in power at the time is who sells us out. And, it happens time after time after time. And let me tell you, this actually helps us get back into the topic. And I'll tell you why.
All right.
On this show, I say very frequently that the majority, the masses, are mushrooms. And I get email from people saying, "Oh, that's unkind, and you're insulting your listeners." Well, it's only an insult if the shoe fits.
Right.
So if you feel insulted, you must be a mushroom. But here is something people need to think about. In this this last week, you know, with the big citizens hearing or whatever it was called, that Stephen Greer's people put on, Stephen Bassett's people put on, up in Washington, D.C. In that, there was a CIA guy who testified about it was his job to make up stories to cover UFO sightings. And he said, you know, we went down to Gulf Breeze, and he said that, you know, every afternoon about, you know, between 3 to 5 o'clock in the afternoon, here they'd come. And he said, you know, UFOs, there they were. Mm-hmm. And he said, so my job was to debunk them. And he said, I said it was swamp gas. And he said, you know what, people bought it.
Because they wanted to buy it.
Yeah,
see, these guys
that's
aren't
the point.
Clever.
They know
these
it.
These guys aren't clever. They're not smart. Mm-hmm. They're not clever and they're not smart. They may think they're clever and smart. But what really makes it work is when people get news like this, they lock the closet door, jump into bed, and pull the covers over their head, because if the monsters can't see you and you can't see the monsters, they can't get you.
Yeah, right. But look,
and I mean,
let me do that.
We act like little children, and it's really...
But let me use another analogy.
Really,
it's like an ostrich putting his head in the sand, right?
Yeah.
But when you got your head in the sand, your ass is in the air, and it's easily kicked.
Absolutely.
And the facts will kick it every time.
Mean, the people are playing into what's really happening is just simple, basic eugenics. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's, you know, when things really start popping, there's not going to be enough. There's not really, you know, enough food to feed everybody in the world now. There could be, but there's not now. But I will tell you is that once you start seeing the real devastation hitting home, at that point, it's really going to be a matter of catch as catch can. And so, you know, if the conversation that I was reading those articles for you from the 70s and the 80s, if that had been allowed to continue,
mm-hmm.
there would have been enough time so that you don't have this heavy compression. And people really don't understand how heavy the compression is. And on my YouTube channel, it's on YouTube, it's Yao Books. Look for my video, Five Stages of Catastrophism. And really what I do is I explain the process people go through when they come to this awareness, and it is an awareness, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very unpleasant process, mostly because, and I did that video because what I saw more than anything else was how horrible it was for the people who were trying to discuss it with friends and family. Oh my God, coworkers, they would be mocked, ridiculed, kicked out of churches, divorced. I'm talking real, real nasty, just shut up and get out of my face with that, you crazy nutter kind of stuff. And they would hit this real, real heavy, you know, boom. And so basically what I'm saying in this is when you become aware, just talk to other people who are aware. Don't talk to people who are still going la, 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 la with their hands over their ears. You know, don't do that. Okay. If you go to pull those hands off their ears, they're going to bitch slap you. Oh, I'm sorry.
That one, the FCC says is not on their list. So,
oh, okay, good.
Okay.
Well, I won't use it. That's what happens. And
yeah.
I mean, I've seen just atrocious things happening to people over the years.
Well,
and it really saddens
and, look,
me.
And
on
it's,
the other
it's
hand,
happened
I am
to people,
inspired by the people who soldier on.
It's happened to people in every strata of our society as well. I mean, Harrington. I mean, you're an astronomer, I don't guess you could go much higher than where he was, position-wise. It happened to him. But it happens from there right down to the bottom where I am. But now, of course, not everybody is cut out of the bolt of cloth I am, but I would recommend trying this. You know, it might work for you, and that is, I don't care. I don't care if people think I'm nuts, I don't care. Because
you know
I
what
am,
you know.
I am know who I am. I know what I know. And
that's it. When you're looking at it and you're seeing it, all right? And I'm not a Chicken Little kind of guy. I mean, my first rule of predictions is be mindful of them, but don't live in expectation of them.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you have to be able to strike a balance. But on the other hand, there's just people are not prepared for this. And where my thoughts are really thinking about now is for those people who are in planning and preparation, is that they're really going to need to factor in the coming panics.
Mm-hmm.
And the panic, because the coming panics, you're just going to have people who are, you know, as I often say, this is Titanic rules.
Yeah.
Elites get the boats, and steerage goes down with the ship. We're steerage. And the whole thing about steerage is, another saying I have, the first to fall are likely to be the last to know. And
well, as
really
steerage, I would say
they
this.
They want the highest possible extermination rate they can with this natural catastrophe so that they can just whittle down the population to something much more manageable. I mean,
well,
look at it.
Okay, look, as steerage.
2 billion bullets.
As steerage.
Hmm?
As steerage, yeah. I have this to say. Don't look for a lifeboat. Keep your surfboard ready.
Bada bing.
Keep your own surfboard ready, and you should do okay, actually, if you do that.
Yeah. You know, you're going to have a much better chance. There's no guarantees for everybody, and that includes the elites. I don't think, you know, I mean, frankly, dying time is near. when the tarmac at Denver International is littered with corporate and private jets like a super bad case of the measles, all right?
Mm-hmm.
When they're reporting that all of a sudden, you know, half the corporate jets in the world are at Denver, that's when we know dying time is near.
And, you know, there's a lot of truth to that. When I was overseas, I learned if you walk out onto the main street and all the taxis are gone, you need to get off that street because something is about to happen. And the taxi drivers always know. So if the taxis are gone off the main street, you get off the main street. If all the corporate jets and private jets are at Denver International Airport, something's about to happen. I agree with that. All right, we're going to have to step away for a break, and when we come back, we will open up the telephone lines. Marshall and I will continue talking, but we would like for you to join the conversation, and you do that quite simply by giving us a call. I'll go ahead and give you the number, 623-444-5889. All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and I have opened up the telephone line, 623-444-5889, 623-444-5889. And if you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that number. It will work from anywhere in the world, but we know it can be expensive to make international long-distance calls from some countries. And so we have for you an additional option, and that would be the flash message. So just go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, scroll down. You will see the picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture, you will see a link that says flash message. So if you're outside of the USA and Canada, you may use the flash message option. Marshall, couple of things that I want to address here, or get you to address. I looked at the internet today, and I looked for something I had seen before, and found it, and that is these maps of what the world is supposed to look like after pole shift. Now, a lot of these were prepared for December the 21st, 2012, and this is what it's going to look like. But most of them are pretty similar, prepared by different people from, got their information from different sources. I don't know, some of them by just calculation, I guess. Some of them channeled Zaytan from ZCAG or something. But anyway, the maps look pretty much the same. And there's not a whole heck of a lot of what is the United States left. There's not a heck of a lot of Russia left. So let's say that we have Planet X. Let's say it's incoming. Let's say that upon its debut, well, it won't be its debut, upon its arrival here in our neighborhood, that all of this pole shift happens and really horrendous things take place. Do you think that those maps will bear any resemblance to the actual result?
Well, you know, there's been a lot of these maps. The Navy has a map. You know, it's one of the reasons why they're up in, I think, the northwest corner of Arkansas. So that's where the Navy brass is retiring.
Mm-hmm.
I've been up in that area of the country, and I can see why. That's really a good survival area. Tremendous number of water resources, very good soil. In general, you know, what you want to find is rolling hills, soft earth, and deep water.
Okay. But, hang on just a second. Caller, if you will hang on just a moment, we'll get you up real quick here. Okay, but is the planet going to look anything like these maps?
It could look like those maps. It could. I mean, these maps are predictions of the future. again, first rule of predictions, you know, always be mindful of them, but never live in expectation. But we're definitely, there's no question about it that the coastal areas are going to get hammered.
Well, according to every map I looked at.
What will happen is that there will be, is what I talk in my book, Crossing the Cusp, Surviving the Edgar Cayce Pole Shift.
Okay.
Which is what I believe is going to be what happens, where in the pole shift, you have a situation where the Earth is not flipping head over heels. All right, it's more than just a magnetic shift, but it's a terrestrial shift. The planet changes, and the lithosphere moves around, kind of like, you know, you peel an orange off the meat, and then but you take it off in one big chunk and you put it back on, and you can rotate that around the meat of the orange. And
okay, so it's going to rip stuff up.
As passing through, it gets a lithosphere lock on our planet, and so it's going to pull it. And it could be very, very extreme. We could have really devastating problems. My concern is that we are seeing a tremendous amount of ice melt in the northern hemisphere, and that creates imbalances. I mean, that you have fresh water and salt water, and fresh water is a little lighter than salt water, but you start moving this stuff around, you get crustal shift displacement. We're seeing this. I mean, there are buoys, entire regions of buoys that are being now reported as defective suddenly. It's like, gee, that's curious.
And we're going to have to get to the phone.
Is these water column changes, you know, that are really dramatic, 20, 100 meters, okay, and the seabeds are rising and falling. And this is a pattern that is happening all around the world. And we have a tremendous amount of subsea volcanism, too.
Yeah, we got to get to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Rusty from Michigan.
Hi, Rusty.
Hi. Hello, Marshall.
Hey, Rusty.
Hi. Now, you talked about these companions that are with this planet. You say they just kind of like discovered those, correct?
What we're tracking are companions because the object is closing with us, so more of it is easy. We're able to see more of it than before.
These are companions of the object that they're tracking.
They could be, you know, right now it's... What's the difference between a planet and a moon? I mean, it's really hard to say because we call our moon, you compare our moon to Pluto. Pluto was downgraded to a minor planet, but it's only 60% of the size of our own moon. So even if it's a lesser planet, so to speak, it's still a planet. Our moon is a moon. It really, you know, it's kind of how you want to define the object and you want to define the size. But what we're clearly seeing now is that we are beginning to discover new companions that are traveling with it. And there are other companions that are being spotted, for example, with Comet Ison. Ison's moving with several objects. So it's just not the one object. Now, I know that is really hard for people who want it to be simple. You know, they just want that one thing to worry about. They don't want to have to worry about a whole lot of little things. But that's not how the universe works.
Well, what I was going to ask was that for, and you guys were just talking about the pole shift and different things that may or may not happen. How much discovering these other objects, moons, whatever they may be, it doesn't really matter. How much, you know, has that changed your predictions of what you think may happen because of these other objects that you have discovered?
No, it's consistent what we've been saying over the years, myself and other Planet X researchers as well, is that if you've got a large object that's coming through the core of the system, you know, it's like a Roman procession. You know, you got the buglers up at the front, and you got the slaves at the back, and everything in between. And that's what we're going to have. You know, the remember when we had all the big, what was it, DA 2012 or something like that, and NASA was it was the one that was passing close to the Earth, and oh my God, there was all kinds of media reporting on it and animations, and it turned out to be just a very boring non-event. And just so happens, the same day that NASA is looking to see if this thing flies through the keyhole, as they put it, boom, we have this Tunguska meteorite again in Russia, in Siberia. And what we have learned is, you know, when it's interesting when you got to listen to how they explain why they're wrong for all the right reasons, because that's really informative information. And whereas, you know, guys like me, we're condemned to being right for all the wrong reasons. But that rock that hit, and if it had hit the ground, the death toll would have been absolutely massive. If it had simply come down even further, closer to the ground before it detonated, all right, it would have been a horrendous death toll. So this was something that was big, and the reason why NASA says they didn't see that coming was that it came from the sun. It was something that was close to the sun and came towards us. And guess what? Where are we observing all these objects? Close to the sun. So this the biggest rock to hit the planet in over a century came out of from next to the sun. NASA doesn't see it. We're monitoring multiple objects near the sun, and everyone calls it a reflection. So, hey, what are you going to do?
Do you have a timeline of when you think you talked about early on about just becoming visible for everyone? Do you have a timeline of when you think that may happen?
I think that the object is going to progressively become visible in more areas. It's going to depend on viewing conditions, but at some point later this year, it's going to become visible. To make a prediction as to when it's going to be visible for everybody is really hard these days, because we have to factor in there's a lot more moisture up in the air. All right, there's more water vapor. It's one of the reasons why we're having these big dumpy storms and floods and whatnot. But also the chemtrail layer is really, really thick. We learned this last year with, you know, airline passengers reporting two sun observations. But here we got a volcano that's above the clouds. It's below the chemtrails, but still the same. My guess would be is probably by late this summer, what we're going to see is a whole slew of videos popping up on YouTube. They're already starting to pop up. All right. We're seeing reports that are coming in from New Zealand, Australia, which we expected these areas, because they're south of the equator. We didn't expect something in the northern latitudes to start popping up, but we have some really, we're analyzing some very credible imagery from a man who took pictures in Ontario, Canada. And so we're seeing this object. It's appearing more often. More people are seeing it. But the fact is 99.99% of the world doesn't look up and doesn't care to. So it's the kind of thing that it is going to have to be much later in the year that this thing is going to, it's just going to be up there. It's going to be unmistakable. And then people are going to know that's it. That's the end of life as we know it. But until then, more people are going to see it. More people are going to disbelieve it. And it's going to that's the way it's going to be. It's, you know, see it and disbelieve it. See it and disbelieve it. That's the pattern that we have. That's going to keep going until it's up there. It's undeniable. And even then, when it's in the sky and it's undeniable, it's this big burning winged object up there. Most people are going to have to see it not just once, but day after day after day after day after day before it sinks in. So, you know, saying when is it visible is irrelevant. It's like holding up a candle in a room full of blind people.
Yeah. Rusty, you got another question or a comment?
Well, this is just kind of a short one. Mm-hmm. So would you rate this plan and whatever is coming with it, friend or foe?
It ain't a friend.
Okay.
It's already causing grief for us.
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we will return right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Marshall Masters. We are on Final Approach, and the telephone number is 623-444-5889. So if you have a question or if you have a comment, we want you to join the conversation. And to do that, what you need to do is pick up your telephone and dial that number. 623-444-5889. You need to be dialing right now because we're going to run out of time. And, you know, I can't tell you how often within the last minute of the show, the phone is ringing. I can't answer it then. It's too late. You got to call now if you're going to call. Okay, Marshall, one of the people that has been on this show and has talked about the whole concept of Nibiru, and he uses that term instead of Planet X. He said, look, he said, it's like a giant gravel field. And he said, it's not just one ball headed this way. It's like a big pile of gravel, space junk headed this way. Would that be correct?
Yeah, that works for me.
Okay, let's go to the telephone caller. You are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Good evening, Kevin. This is Steve from Georgia.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, Steve. What part of Georgia?
Say again?
What part of Georgia?
Oh, well, as a matter of fact, southwest Georgia. And that'll just bring me straight to what was going to be point number two. We're moving into the second week of May in southwest Georgia, and I'm sitting here in my house with a long-sleeve shirt on and a wool sweater over that. And if I had any firewood left over from this past winter, it'd be in my fireplace burning right now. You know, it's chilly here. And it has been a chilly winter and a chilly spring, but it is chilly. I mean, second week of May in Georgia, we should be in shorts and put on a T-shirt if you get cold. You know, it's just hot quick here. And it's just not doing that this year. And
let me say this for our international audience who may not be aware of where Georgia is. Georgia is very, very south in the United States. It's right on the Gulf of Mexico. You can't go much further south till you go to Florida, and then you can dip down further south. But it's very, very south, so it ought to be very, very warm there right now.
But, you know, if you ask anybody from Georgia, they'll just say it's easy to find. It's the center of the universe.
Okay, Steve, go ahead.
Okay, and the other thing, Kevin, I wanted to thank you for bringing the phone conversation with Jerry Wills on. That was full of energy. That was incredible. That was an incredible conversation.
Well, thank you, and we hope to have some more of those as they pop out every once in a while in a place where they can do phone calls.
All right, and Marshall, thank you for being a guest tonight. You know, your use of the English language just never ceases to amaze me. You are a true linguist, you're so gifted in your use of the English language. It just tickles me to death, and. So I'll give the air over to whomever else, and thank you for taking my call.
And thank you for the call.
I hope someone has an extra half a cord of wood out there to help you.
Yeah, really, really. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, the telephone line is open. We do have time for maybe one more call. 623-444-5889. Marshall, when you say that when this Planet X arrives, it's going to be, you know, life is over as we know it. I want to kind of underscore what you have said before. That doesn't mean all life ceases. It means business as usual is done. Things change.
Well, that's it. And I mean, it doesn't take long. You know, our society is built on artificial platform of oil and these various fossil fuels, electricity.
Well, okay, we do have a caller, so you'll have to wrap it up pretty quick.
This stuff disappears. It's a matter of days.
All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Doc in Arkansas, Kevin.
Hello, Doc.
Hey, Doc.
I have a question.
Okay.
My question is about, here it goes, you know, he was saying about on the camera, you know, out there by the volcano, that they couldn't tell the distance between the item that's out there by the sun.
Okay.
Now, is there any way that he can contact the university that owns that camera to find out, like, what's the power lenses or anything like that, you know, from, because we know the distance between here and the sun, so we should be able to go from that point of distance and, you know, be able to calculate the shadows and everything like that. That's all.
Well, it's a convoluted process, caller. I mean, it's really difficult to do it, and, you know, there's different cameras catching this thing, but is the camera zoomed in? Is it set for a panoramic view? How many elements are on the lens? What are the viewing conditions? In other words, there's just so many variables that it's really impossible to say exactly how far it is, other than obviously this object is on the other side of the sun, off to the side.
Plus, the camera is showing you the reflection, the glow of the object. It's not showing you the object.
Right.
Okay. And so how brightly it's glowing would be, and I think that's, isn't that called the albedo?
Yeah.
And
yeah, I mean,
that can disturb your calculations as well.
We're seeing that with this particular camera, which is a high definition camera with 1296 resolution. Now, on the other hand, we have 2010 images of the object, which only showed up very briefly during the days, very short viewing times of 30 minutes or so or less, whereas now we have viewing times that are three and a half hours during a day. But that older camera was set on a zoom focus, all right? So it had a different resolution, and it was zoomed in. So consequently, it's just everything is going to be, you know, like that little decal on your side view mirrors. Object are closer than you think. So that's why it does that. In terms of, we do principally what we call progression studies, where we're looking to see where is the object moving? Is it moving in a natural manner? And we find that information is really, really useful for us. But we do, you know, we have been doing a sensor analysis on it, and it's closing. And it is getting brighter. It's noticeably brighter. I see that from January when I first started looking at it. And when I first started looking at it in January, it had a real clear terminator to it. A terminator is that line between night and dark.
Right.
If you're looking at the moon always has a terminator except for when you have a full moon. Well, this object, when I was first watching it, and the first thing that intrigued me about it was I said, if it's a dang reflection, how come it's got a terminator? How come it's got a daylight side and a dark side?
We got a 20-second terminator
now.
Now,
just the whole thing's
lit up. Okay, 20 seconds.
Go. Okay, to follow this, two suns in the sky, TOWsunsinthesky.com or YOWUSA.com. And we have a mailing list there for Google. We announce all of our stuff. We are working on our next update video, which will be titled Smoking Gun Proof.
All right. Marshall Masters, ladies and gentlemen, I appreciate you for coming and talking with us this evening, Marshall. It's always interesting when you're here. And if you will, stay on the line with me for a moment as I bring this in for a landing. Ladies and gentlemen, if this is your first time to experience the Kevin Smith Show, it's an acquired taste. Reason? I don't promote an agenda here. And other than I promote us getting as much information as we can about as many topics as we can. And we give you the opportunity to call in and ask your questions and get clarification. And then it's up to you to make up your own mind about it all. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You may call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time.